Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Throwdown on Thursdays and the show that keeps picking up steam each and every week. So blessed to do this show. It's a Doc Talk podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me, and I truly mean that. Dr. Greg Roscoe out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, playing a little producing and a little co-host till our guest gets in here. The Lander now, who's in surgery right now, so I'll man the fort till he gets in. 347-205-9631. We'll get you to the front of the line as you're loaded up. Anything after that, 60 minutes goes by quick. blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So as I lay the groundwork down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, Doc the Threes, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And I know you're bringing up a great subject till your guest comes in at the top of the hour, it looks like.
Absolutely, Mark. We have a great topic for tonight. We also have a great guest. And, you know, I'm doing well. As you know, the show is picking up steam. We're, you know, in a different time slot, and it seems to be, you know, very, very good for the show and hopefully for our listeners. So thank you for that, Mark, that production. You know, here in Pittsburgh, you know, it feels like spring. It's about 50 degrees. Tomorrow is Groundhog Day. So we'll hear what the groundhog has to say, Mark, about the weather. And, you know, for the next 6 weeks, we're hoping that, of course, we have some nice weather going in through the rest of February and then into March. But right now, when we're looking out our windows, most of the great big piles of snow have melted. There's a little snow here and there, but overall we can see green. So let's see what the groundhog does tomorrow. Sometimes he does disappoint us, but hopefully he'll give us a good report. And they don't have a groundhog in L.A., do they, Mark?
They don't. So we won't have to worry about six more weeks of winter. I know back there we'll find out if you're going to get it. You could be getting the rain that we're getting in Los Angeles. We're supposed to be getting five more days of rain, and people will be covering puddles. But that's a story for another day, and my buddy that's a meteorologist. I said he got you got the best job in the country, man. Sunny skies in 70, 365 days a year almost.
That's called paradise.
Yeah. But
beautiful.
This topic you're bringing out, Doc, is a big one, and this is going to get a loaded response. I can see that.
Yes, you know, as far as just Mark, just to finish our threes, people can get a hold of me, GJRMD308@outlook.com. We have Dr. Rodney Lander now, a thoracic surgeon, on the show this evening. Rod's been here before. He's a friend of the show. And I've known him personally for many years, sending him patients and giving him excellent patient care. You know, we've had a lot of interest in many topics, and, you know, I go through the emails trying to pick out the more interesting ones, Mark. And I had several talking about lung cancer, lung disease. You know, what is lung surgery about? Can you breathe without having both of your lungs? You know, a lot of very, very important questions. And what I wanted to do this evening, Dr. Landon Al did call me earlier today. He is in surgery, and he would try to come in at the top of the show. If so, great. If not, Mark, you and I will carry the ball.
No doubt.
You know, as far as
all ready to...
Is it okay to get some questions?
Because I'm getting, I don't want to get battered up. Sometimes we can't get to all these questions. Because it's hard to get them, but let me bring up a few of them. Pat coming up, a first-time listener from Bellingham, Washington, basically says lung cancer. What are the first signs of lung cancer other than maybe a cough?
Very good question. I mean, very pertinent. You know, and again, with lung cancer, sometimes there's very few symptoms. depending on the size of the tumor. You know, most of these tumors in the lung that are cancerous start out very small and over many, many, many months to years continue to grow. And where we run into trouble, we know we have a problem, is when our patient becomes short of breath, has bloody mucus that they're spitting, chest pain, then we know there's a problem. But there's very little symptomology going on when this thing starts. And, you know, if I can just add to the beginning of the story, we know that smoking is definitely an issue for us, leading to lung cancer. And, you know, the numbers are astounding. The people that do have a smoking habit and develop lung cancer. And, you know, it's always a good idea, if at all possible, Mark, for our patients to stop smoking. Depending on where they are in life, it doesn't make any difference. But some studies have shown that for every cigarette you stop smoking, you add 15 minutes to your life, which I thought was a very interesting statistic. And, you know, we talk about smoking a pack, which is 20 cigarettes a day, which is an awful lot. And, again, leads to damage in our pulmonary tissues. So the question being, usually there's very little early symptomology, but when we do have symptomology, the problem is far, far larger. You think that helps answer the question, Mark?
I think that basically does it and covers even more of it. I mean, it's interesting with lung cancer. I remember when I was in high school, and one of the reasons I never got into smoking, they had brought a lung in, and when you see a lung that is just filtered with soot, it almost reminded me of a coal mine with all the soot and stuff in it, and compared to a clean lung, it's like night and day, Doc, and I don't know if you've actually seen it, but they had brought a lung in, what a lung looks like if you smoked. And this thing looked like you were in a coal mine, I swear to God.
Absolutely, Mark. You know, that type of a model has been used throughout the United States, so you're not alone in seeing that. You know, our lungs are like filters, if you will. And again, they filter the air. We absorb the air. So when we bring in debris, it, of course, stays stuck in our lung. We're never able to shed the debris that we bring into the lung. And when we start to bring in carcinogens as nicotine, tobacco products, it damages that tissue, and we're never able to rid ourselves of it. And, of course, once it gets contained in the lung, causes damage, and our cells start to be dysplastic, the process of cancer has started. And, you know, you're absolutely right. The lungs of a smoker are like an old dirty filter that has been filtering soot. And, you know, again, there could be areas within that soot that start developing cancer. And, you know, our lungs do have the ability to maybe remove some of that with some of the secretions. But smoking, as a carcinogen, damages our pulmonary tissue. So, Mark, that's why we start smoking.
Let me get one more question. Dave coming in from Hermosa Beach, California. Dave, welcome to the extravaganza with Dr. Greg Roscoe and Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. He basically says, guys, I got a friend that buys 3 cartons of cigarettes pretty much a month, and it cost him about $365.
Sure.
These are that cost now $12 a pack. That is unbelievable, and what an expensive habit that is. $345 for, cartons of cigarettes at $12 a pack. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they probably still come 20 in a carton. But,
right.
God,
right.
That is crazy for this out of Hermosa Beach. Yeah, I'll let you take it from there with Carl out of Hermosa.
Right. I think there's a couple different aspects here. You know, one, of course, the addictability of smoking, how one gets addicted and can't stop. And, you know, I have patients that are smokers as well. They plan their lives around their cigarettes. You know, I have to have my morning cigarette. I have to have my cigarette with my cup of coffee. I have to have it with my dinner. And people, you know, have that going on. But what an addiction. That's one issue. And, of course, you know, that person that is smoking is not helping. I have no idea how old the patient is or how long he or she has been smoking, but they're definitely causing damage to their respiratory tract, their lungs, but their heart also. So they're really hurting their health. And Mark, you know, you've heard the stories about people going to Starbucks, spending $5 a day on coffee, you know, that kind of thing. If you'd put that in a retirement plan, like an IRA or something like that, it seems you would have a nice nest egg over 15 or 18 or 20 years rather than have invested in a Starbucks and or cigarettes. So the gentleman could have, you know, alternatives with his money to maybe have him live longer, but also be able to have a more enjoyable life. How tragic. That's what I would say.
Not only that, and just to throw a little more, you know, fuel on the fire on that one, as far as when you look at this, I mean, you know, the Surgeon General, and they always say this on the side of those things, you know, determines it's bad for your health and everything. And yet nobody puts a stop to it as far as trying to curb it or making it better. We all know, and we've talked about this on the show, about fast foods. It's cheap, so people can't afford sometimes the restaurants, so they'll hit the fast foods. The fast foods have the coupons, the value meals or whatever, where you can get on that. But now in the fast foods, the workers are starting to make more money as the restaurant workers are, Doc. And so now they're trying to get foods and the fast foods up to the same type of quality. You know, maybe 100%, you know, white meat in their chicken in a Jack in the Box or something like that. We're kind of looking, okay, let's help people eat better if they can't afford it. But we're not doing anything to help people get better with cigarette smoking. Am I right or wrong?
Well, I think, you know, your point is very well taken. You know, Mark, with regard to cigarette smokers, and then you throw in the marijuana aspect today, too, of people smoking more marijuana. Mark, they're very hard addictions to stop. And, you know, as far as trying to force someone to do that, hard to do, but it's a long road to wean them off the cigarettes, Mark. All right.
Right.
And the programs that do it, and they have the nicotine gum, et cetera, et cetera. It's still a long process, even with gum, to go ahead and get people off cigarettes. You know, one of the fallacies today, I know you've heard about it as well, is vaping. That, you know, if I stop cigarette smoking, I start to vape, I'll be able to wean myself off smoking. You know, there's somewhat of a fallacy there that typically some of the things that people vape are just the same products that are in cigarettes, and they just stay addicted. So, you know, we need, and you're right, we need possibly better health programs. We need better ways medically to get people off of cigarettes and off the addiction. And, you know, there's addictive medicine today that deals with people on drugs, you know, drug habits, and to see if they can get them off of those medications and get them onto a healthier way of life. But, Mark, it takes an awful lot of energy to do that. And, you know,
not only that,
go ahead.
Interesting,
yes, sir.
Doc, to me, I always would think the lungs are the most important organs of the respiratory system. And when that shuts down, you know, it's kind of like closing a hole. It's harder to breathe, and that would be the thing. Let me, you know, so that's got to be one of the most important organs. So that's that respiratory thing, like as we're alluding to. Am I right or wrong?
You're absolutely correct. You know, as far as our lives, as an organism, you know, with regard to how this body works, basically we need the oxygen to go ahead and nurture our tissues, whether it's the lung, the heart, the brain. And, you know, what happens when we do have damage from smoking? And I think if I can allude here, Mark, just a little bit, if we talk about something called COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you know, the smoking damages the small alveolar sacs in our lungs. Our lungs have billions of these little tiny sacs that absorb oxygen. They carry the oxygen into the bloodstream. Then the bloodstream carries the oxygen to the rest of the organs of our body. When we have smoked and caused damage, we've cut down the number of these small alveoli, and we just have very large sacs in the lung. So our absorption is far, far less of the oxygen. Mark, and you're right. These are the people, Mark, you see carrying around oxygen. They're in a wheelchair. They can't walk up a pair of stairs. You know, they have oxygen when they're laying down in bed because they're unable to nurture their body with oxygen. And the organ that's damaged, of course, to start with, is the lung. So your point is very, very well taken. And, you know, let's not start smoking.
Lance from Pola, Florida chimes in, if I can, and he basically says, so what you're saying, Doc, is he had an aunt that was on a mechanical ventilator, also known as a breathing machine. Is that what you're basically talking about?
Well, it could be there. You know, you talk about, you know, it's a process that overall, you know, we start to damage the lung tissue. We cut down on the number of alveoli. We start to have to supplement with oxygen. All right, you know, an hour a day, 2 hours a day activities. Then it's 24 hours a day. And then overall, if the lungs are damaged and the absorption is very small, then the next step to keep people alive is a ventilator, or you're right, mechanical ventilation. But, Mark, that's no way to live. That's no way to live, to be on that machine. You know, Mark, just to finish that up, you know, people have, and I think you've seen it, you know, they may have a tracheostomy tube. And that's that tube in the neck that goes into the lung. And they can connect the ventilator to that so that they can breathe. But it's a heck of a way to have to live. We don't want to go down that road to get to that point. If we're smoking, we want to stop, try to improve the quality of our health so we don't get there. But go ahead, Mark. That was an excellent point.
Yeah, that's the other thing. So basically, when you see, and I've seen this be in hospitals or stuff, or you know,
sure.
It says, and I never knew what this means because they've always said they'll have a sign on a door. It's always I don't know, oxygen in use in this room or something. What does that mean? That person in that room is, you know, I don't know.
Very good question. Number one, oxygen is very flammable.
Right.
So that overall, what you don't want to do is cause a spark or go in there smoking and ignite the oxygen. So that's one of the warning that there's oxygen in use. But number two, that tells us that the patient is having respiratory problems, that they need supplemental oxygen to breathe. They can't breathe on room air. you know, most all of us here are breathing room air. And we're able to bring it in, oxygenate our bodies, and feel pretty good. You know, if we go out and we start to jog, we may have to breathe a little bit faster. It may take us a little longer to get enough air in there. But the more times over we do it, the better that we're going to feel and improve the quality of our health. But you're absolutely right. Oxygen in use means that that patient has to have additional oxygen for them to live, Mark. They've had a lot of respiratory problems. Or the other thing is cardiac. They have a heart problem as well. But normally they're sick patients. So we don't want to be there.
Right. And let me ask you, since we're on this topic, and, you know, we'll field more questions here, but I just want to get a couple things off, you know,
sure,
because I had a mother-in-law that smoked constantly. And God rest her soul. We lost her a few years ago. Great shape and everything. The reason you're starting to hear this, and I don't want to take Dalen's comment out of Chelmsford, because he basically kind of coexists more or less what I'm trying to say, is sometimes people smoke to drop weight, if you notice. When you smoke, you don't put on that much weight because you're not eating. Is that a correct way of more or less following in the same footsteps?
Well, I think you're right. People talk about the reason they smoke, especially younger women, is basically to handle, right, their weight issues. But it's a hell of a price to pay to have lung damage to keep your waist slim. That's the trade-off, Mark. And, you know, trying to teach people there are other ways to lose weight to stop smoking is, of course, you know, a much longer process. However, it's a much healthier process if we can watch what we put in our mouth, we exercise, and we don't smoke. We're going to have a hell of a lot longer longevity than we are if we're smoking to keep the weight off. But you're absolutely right in what you've heard, and, you know, what you see is that overall, that's another reason to smoke is the weight issue.
So let me bring Robin in from, you know, we get her from Ohio, Warren, Ohio. She's an avid listener to your show. So
yes,
guys,
Robin.
Great job again, and nice to see you're holding down the fort till your guest gets in. What's the difference between the smokers that smoke consistently packs on a daily basis compared to if you're working in the steel industry? Isn't that the same type of thing? They're breathing all that soot, even if they're not smoking, or is that a different way of looking at your lung? Wow, that's an interesting one.
That's a very good question. And, you know, if we look at the air we breathe, whether we're smoking or working in a carbon factory or a steel factory, when we're bringing that toxic material into our bodies, it's very unhealthy. So as far as, you know, is she right? She is right. You know, in the steel industry, you have the heavy metals that, you know, can cause cancer. That overall, it's not healthy. Look at the longevity of many steel workers. You know, you don't see them living to be 70, 80, 90. You know, they've lived a very, very difficult life. And again, very toxic life overall. And, you know, you hear about, you know, these attorneys that are advertising about asbestos. People have worked around asbestos leading to cancer. That's another issue, that we breathe that material in. You know, whether people worked on a Navy base or were in the military around asbestos, that, again, very toxic materials leading to cancer. So none of that is good. And, you know, in our part of the country where we are, we talk about carbon factories, making metals out of carbon. And, you know, these workers that are in there, and some of them are working 20, 25 years, the carbon can be very toxic for their nose, sinuses, but also for their lungs. And it leads to an early demise. And, you know, We want to be careful and we want to have employment, but would like to do something that we can enjoy the fruits of our labor. So indeed, toxic materials definitely lead to early demise, whether it's in a steel factory, working in a submarine factory, you know, working with smoking every day. It's not good for our health, Mark.
Wow, that's interesting when you break that down with the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's you know, with the whole, you know, lung and everything and clean lungs. So more or less the advantage of if you don't smoke, you can live substantially longer than if you did smoke or worked in a factory where you're not, you know, you're breathing in them toxic streams of air, I would imagine.
Well,
yeah.
You know, Mark, you know, again, you have to look at many other factors also. You know, people are not just one factor. They're multi, you know, disciplinary, so to speak. You know, they have many other aspects. Maybe they're diabetic. Maybe they have severe arthritis. Maybe they have additional pulmonary disease. Maybe they've had a heart attack. You know, you have that on top of then smoking. You know, these comorbidities tend to lead to early demise as well. So, you know, people are not just a one single dimension, Mark. They're, you know, multifaceted, and it makes looking at the subject a little more difficult. But indeed, we know when you stick in smoke, toxic chemicals, asbestos, carbon, it makes our health far, far less healthy. I think the right word is that overall we put ourselves at risk. So we want to be careful about that. You know, you want to take care of this organism. We do have to work. But, you know, Mark, we've talked on, again, not getting away from lung cancer, but, you know, we talk about taking care of our bodies through, number one, nutrition.
Yeah.
Number two, exercise. You know, number three, avoiding, you know, used to be that people drank a lot. Today, that's decreasing. Alcohol intoxication, we're seeing a little less liver cirrhosis than we once did. But you had people that were drinkers as well as smokers, and that led to a tremendous amount of, we call it, aerodigestive cancer, you know, cancer of the airway and the eating tube. So that, you know, as we become more knowledgeable, more healthy, we eliminate, you know, the over-intoxication. We eliminate 20 cigarettes a day. We start to eat better, less fats, less sugars, you know, more protein. We become healthier. And then we go out and we're able to exercise, Mark. You know, I mean, the formula for life, of course, is you need to have adequate sleep and rest. You need good nutrition coming through our oral cavity and our gut. And then, of course, we need to exercise, improve blood flow from our extremities to our brain, to our heart, and, again, have our kidneys kicking in well, filtering, as well as our liver. Mark, and that's the simple truth to good health. You know, any health book you read, right? I don't care if you pick up a yoga book or some type of exercise book. Mark, what do they start with? Let's talk about your health. Let's talk about your nutrition. Let's start to implement exercise. And let's implement sleep. Mark, those are the basics. There's nothing hard about it.
You're exactly right. You know, with breaking this subject down, Doc, you know, there's a couple of things I'd like to bring to the forefront. What would be the life expectancy? And I know it's hard to navigate that, but a ballpark, what would be the life expectancy of a person with lung cancer?
You know, now again, Mark, we have to look at comorbidities, you know, other problems, how long they have smoked, the type of cancer that it is, the location of cancer. You know, with regard to treatment, I think that's what you're alluding to here a little bit. If one is diagnosed with a lung cancer. What do you do about it? And I think that's where we're going here. How long can these people live? Well, we don't know that across the board, but we do know that if we're able to catch the lung cancer early in its staging and we do appropriate treatment, and I wanted to talk about, well, what are the treatments sometimes that we look at? Well, sometimes we're able to go into the lung and do an endoscopic removal of the cancer, as we go into the belly, and we can get the cancer out. There are other times, Mark, the cancer has gone a little bit larger, and we need to go in and we call it a wedge resection. We take a larger piece of tissue, making sure we have clear margins. Then we go in the next time, if we have to, and take out a lobe. There's three lobes of the lung on the right, two on the left. Depending on where the cancer is, we may need to do the lobectomy, meaning taking out the lobe the cancer is in. Now, it depends on, again, having said all that, it depends on if the patient can tolerate losing part of their lung because the rest of the lung is damaged. And depending on where the tumor is or tumors are, they may need to have one entire lung removed. And that's called a pneumonectomy. And people can survive with regard to having only one lung. So, hey, Mark, the sooner the better. Let's get the problem diagnosed. But go ahead. That was a little bit long-winded.
And not only that, let me bring in another, get another one. Albert from Poway goes, how does liver play into this whole thing, too? Because liver disease, you're talking about lung cancer and everything, well, alcohol ruins the liver, but do these run hand in hand, liver and lungs?
Sure.
I know they're all,
well,
he said, I know they're both start with the letter L. Yeah.
Well, you've got to give him credit. That's exactly right off the start of this. With regard to that, we talk about lung disease. Let's just stay with that for the minute. Let's use the word cancer in the lung. There, of course, is a potential for the cancer in the lung to migrate into the lymph nodes around the lung. And then once the cancer, and the word is metastasized into the lymph nodes, typically the next stage is into the liver. So the lung cancer can metastasize into the liver so that one would then have a far more advanced stage of cancer. And that's where you have a primary cancer in the lung, but metastasis to the liver. And the liver helps our digestion. It helps control many metabolic functions of our body, as we mentioned, with digestion, with blood clotting, also with hormones. Very, very important liver function. So it is something that the lungs are tied into the liver through the pathways of the lymph nodes that can lead to lung cancer metastasizing to the liver. I think that's what the gentleman has asked us. But if one is a drinker,
So let me bring this kind of coincides with the whole lung cancer and smoking. We're on that subject. 25 minutes left in the great show. We're still waiting for Dr. Rodney Lanter now, and I think he might be here.
Wonderful.
And
go ahead.
I know we got Dr. Rodney Lanter now. Let me just get this one thing out before we bring him in, Doc. With the way we're talking about smoking, and these listeners are bringing up some great questions. So let's say you were a smoker from maybe when you were in your 20s and you kind of cold turkeyed it in your late 30s. Does that prolong it? Does that, or did you create that big problem there that it might solidify it a little ways, but you're going to still get lung cancer? Now, that could be an interesting question to bring forefront.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think we could sure bring Dr. Lander now on that. But normally, if one has smoked, has not developed a lung cancer through that process and is monitored, quits smoking, they may not lead to a lung cancer. So it is, you know, good to stop the process and help maintain your health. And I know Dr. Landrinell has seen many stages of cancer and people with cancer developing under many, many different aspects of these clinical scenes. So if he's in, would like to ask him that question as well, Mark, if you can bring him in.
He's all ready to go.
Dr. Landrinell, good evening.
Hey, how are you? And thanks for inviting me again. We had an emergency Tampa General Cancer Institute meeting that I had to attend. I apologize.
We knew Dr. Landrinell, it was something. I thought maybe you were in surgery, but we thank you for the time to be on our show, Doc Talk. And our listeners, Dr. Landrinell is a thoracic surgeon, well-known throughout the world. He has published many articles, many chapters in books, and is continuing to do that overall. Currently, he is in Tampa, Florida, and he's still doing thoracic surgery. He is still writing and having probably a very good life down there in Tampa. He has been up here in the Pittsburgh area for many, many years and has been very successful and has been a big name in the thoracic surgery community. So, Dr. Landrinell, thank you for being on our show. You know, we're talking tonight about really the discussion has got off on lung cancer, and I think our last listener had called in and mentioned that if you smoked and, you know, you did it for a few years and then you stopped, what are the chances that you may develop a lung cancer in later life? Can you talk a little bit about that, Dr. Landrinell?
Well, about 85% of lung cancer is related to smoking. However, if you quit smoking, the likelihood of that being a problem in the future is significantly reduced. It doesn't go to zero because there, just as Mr. Mancini mentioned, you have a little bit of a trail from your activity from a younger age. But the risk is significantly reduced. Now, additionally, we know that cardiovascular disease, heart disease, pancreatic cancer, stomach cancer, bladder cancer are all related to smoking. That's the number one risk factor in those diseases, pancreatic and even colon cancer. So if you stop smoking, you're helping yourself in so many ways with regard to your cardiovascular health and the prevention of cancer in many areas of your body. Additionally, just the lung health. You know, emphysema is primarily related to the injury from the fumes and the toxins within smoke. So you take all that together. I mean, you really are helping your life, and also by not smoking around your loved ones, reducing the secondhand smoke risk of cancer development. So if you quit smoking, you're going to reduce your likelihood of getting lung cancer and other cancers. But it doesn't go to zero; it still needs to be monitored. And additionally, you know, there's an approved program through all the insurance agencies and Medicare, Medicaid for screening, just as we screen for colon cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, ovarian cancer. We now have approved and very effective low-dose CT screening, you know, very low risk with regard to radiation risk, but very accurate in identifying lung cancer at an early stage and changing the impact of lung cancer substantially, and if we find it in an earlier stage, a curative stage. Additionally, we find other diseases before they present themselves, such as kidney cancers, aortic aneurysms, coronary artery calcification, et cetera. So this is called low-dose CT imaging takes about 5 minutes, and to qualify, you have to be over 55 with a significant smoking history. And that's it. Go to your PCP, your family physician, and get enrolled if you meet those criteria.
Criteria.
There's a 20-plus percent reduction in mortality from lung cancer with the use of this surveillance, and a 5% reduction in overall mortality with this type of screening related to the other diseases that we discussed.
So that overall, with our screening, we're going to prevent comorbidities being other cancer in other organs and also identify a cancerous area far earlier, correct?
Yes, in a curative stage either, but with regional therapies such as surgery or radiation or with the combined therapies with your medical oncologist.
Beautiful. And, you know, Rod, with regard to this screening, what are we looking at? Are we looking for nodules? Are we looking for spiculation? What is the CT scan you're going to show us that would be suspicious? Can you help us?
Yeah, it's going to be like a coin-like nodule within the substance of the lung, which shouldn't have that. You know, the lung on X-ray is black because there's mainly air in your lung, and so the radiation particles just – or the X-ray beams just pass right through without being reflected
so that
like a coin lesion. It's called a coin lesion. It looks like a little, and those then have different characteristics. Again, like the sun or stellate or sawtooth edge, which is much more concerning, or a smooth edge, which is less concerning. However, still needs to be monitored.
And, you know, let's talk about that a little bit. If you were to, you know, do this low-dose screening, history of smoking on a 55-year-old, you see a coin lesion. Rod, let our listeners know, what do you do next? Are we going to do a VATS? Are we going to do some other type of procedure? Are we going to get in there and biopsy? What exactly are we going to do for this patient? If he comes in, he was screened, has your family doctor referred him in, he wants to see Dr. Landrenow, he's sitting in your chair. What do you tell him, Rod?
Well, I think, you know, we have such major advances in you know, endoscopic, bronchoscopic diagnoses. We actually have robotic bronchoscopy now, which can lead the biopsy forceps of the bronchoscope way out into the periphery of the lung with a 90% chance of diagnosing
wow.
what's going on. So,
is the patient asleep?
Well, he's in la-la land, like you'd have a colonoscopy
okay.
or something.
All right,
and
got
so
it.
The,
okay.
And so the second, that's how we approach more worrisome nodules. However, if it's a small little nodule, has less, you know, angry characteristics, we may say come back in 3 months and get another scan and see if there's been changes. So there's a whole, you know,
process.
Yeah, a decision tree with regard to which way you're going to go, right, left, or
yes.
straight on. Very rarely to overcome the anxiety of our listeners, are you going to go straight to a surgeon? You know, but we're involved in the decision making with the radiologist, with the pulmonologist, and so, you know, said, this looks more serious. I think we really got to move ahead with a biopsy or
sure.
Like. So that's we don't try to scare people with say, you know, we're sharpening our blades and you're next.
Okay.
You know, that's gonna...
Well, very good. We don't want to scare our listeners. You know, just a point along this CT scanning, Rod, how often would we want to talk about CT scanning for these patients? Once every 6 months, you mentioned 3 months. How often can we do this?
Well, you know, it's very low dose. It's up. It's on the order of like going through the security at the airport, you know. And
okay.
And you know, ladies begin their mammographic screening in their mid-40s usually,
sure.
unless they have a strong family history. Again, the national recommendations are a person who's over 55 and has a smoking history needs to discuss this with their primary care doctor and push it. You know, it's
sure
it's so valuable and harmless.
Beautiful. And Ron, do most institutions do this low dose screening, or do we have to go to a specialized center?
It's everywhere in the country at this point. It's like mammography is available, you know.
Wonderful. And, Rod, can people, you know, as far as the people you're doing this, if they're continuing to smoke, can you still do it? I mean, you would still tell them, we still want to do it, even though you're still smoking two packs a day.
Well, that's really a high-risk group, and you got to tell them, hey, you're the one that really needs to be on the front line here. The other thing that is part of the program, and this is the efforts by the primary care doctor and nursing and certainly the wife with the roller pin behind her,
sure.
Go into a smoking cessation program. And so there's aids to help you, get away from smoking if you're actively smoking.
Surely. Right. You know, we had talked a little earlier, and you're far more familiar with it than I am, but what is available for smoking cessation today? Where can our patients go? You know, what will insurances pay for? Where do they go to learn how to stop smoking? And I use the word to learn how to stop smoking. Where do they go?
I think their PCP is a great resource. That should be your primary resource, your family care doctor. If not, if a pulmonologist is someone who you're seeing because
sure.
of a chronic cough or whatever, the emergency room, if you go in for some other issue and a family member says, yeah, you need to get in that program. There's so many ways to get into the program.
There is care available. And, you know, Rod, we talked earlier today, you know, about the signs and symptoms of lung cancer. And mm-hmm. I had brought up initially it is somewhat silent unless this thing were to grow, erode into a blood vessel, we start to have, sputum with blood, we're short of breath. Usually it's somewhat silent earlier in its course. Do you find that to be true?
It's like every other cancer that we're able to cure. Colon cancer is why colonoscopy has a role, mammography, a blood test for prostate cancer, ovarian blood tests. That's where we can find earlier disease, which is not spread, and where we have opportunities for cure. When you have significant symptoms, respiratory symptoms from lung cancer, it could just be a bronchitis. In fact, it's not
sure.
uncommon for somebody just to have a bronchitis, and while you get an X-ray, just evaluate that, and you find this little distal in the lung, the coin lesion, and then now that becomes the center of attention beyond the acute antibiotic care,
sure.
care you get. But go ahead.
No, you'll see the acute bronchitis or the bronchitis in smokers as well. So if they do
sure.
have some symptoms, not to panic, it may not be a lung cancer.
But you need to, particularly if you have a smoking history or some pulmonary disorder related to that, you need to be a little bit more proactive than the 20-year-old who comes in with a cough, you know what I mean? So that is not a smoker.
And, the cough is a little bit of a sign. There's some bronchial irritation or pulmonary irritation that needs to be tracked, especially in someone that is suspicious, potentially has been a smoker for years. And, Rod, what about people going from smoking into vaping? What have you noticed? What have you seen? You know, what seems to be... Is there relevance to get off of cigarettes by vaping? Have you seen that strategy?
I have, and I use it all the time in my patients who have difficulty or have had difficulty getting off cigarettes who come in and they have a spot that I need to take care of surgically. So I transition them to a vape,
sure.
with important stern direction. I want them to do that because I know it's a difficult habit. And vaping, the biggest issue that I find with vaping is the aromatics that go in there to flavor it, and people can be allergic to that and develop lung fibrosis from that, but not the nicotine. The nicotine doesn't do that. The second thing is it's a gateway for kids to go from vaping to cigarettes later
smoke.
Tonight. And,
yes.
And the third thing is the vape industry is affecting the tobacco industry. So it's kind of it's the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? So the vapes are not looked upon in a happy way by the cigarette companies because they're losing market share. But I have patients on vapes for years, and I monitor them, and I recommend that they keep it as a low dose as possible, and third, that they avoid the aromatic versions, the ones that got the flavoring,
And, Martin, for the fibrosis, as far as, say, from the patient's standpoint, does the vaping give them the satisfaction that cigarette smoking always did? You know, I was mentioning,
you know,
Mark.
Go ahead. I mean, Greg, it's usually a little bit different because for some reason the entire process, that harshness of the smoke also becomes part of the habit. You know what I mean? And so you don't have that. You don't have that with the vape, but it's 90% effective and overcome the, or 95% effective and overcome the nicotine urge.
And Mark, what about people saying, I'm smoking to lose weight, keep my weight down? Does vaping do that, or do they fall into that habit as well, saying, well, I'll vape, keep my weight down, and not have to worry about dieting?
Well,
have
yeah,
you seen
true.
That?
I mean, it does. You know, nicotine is an appetite suppressant. So,
yep.
So, yeah, it's used for that, but also the, you know, the effects of on your emotional status, et cetera, with, and calming you down with nicotine. I'm not a smoker, never been, but two of my sisters
sure.
and my brother does. So, anyway,
you've seen it. And you know, Mark, what I'd like to do, Rod, you know, we kind of giving our public here definitions. You know, I've had some emails now about their doctor wants them to have a mediastinoscopy. Are you still doing mediastinoscopies today?
Yes, but again, that's deferred usually as a second pure diagnostic procedure behind this bronchoscopy I'm telling you about, this innovative ultrasound bronchoscopy or the navigational bronchoscopy I described. We do much fewer mediastinoscopies now, but it's still an important part of what we do in surgery to help diagnose disease that's near the
sure.
throat or the windpipe.
And you know,
but it's,
Mark,
it's not
we
the first order of it's not the first order of business now. It's you know, we do what's called endoscopic bronchial ultrasound at the time of bronchoscopy, where we can put a little needle and aspirate cells instead of needing an incision.
Wow! And this is done transbronchially through the windpipe.
Yes.
Wow! And you know, if we go on, you know, just some words that I have coming across my screen. Wedge resection. You know, when do we do a wedge resection? And again, talking about lobectomy, talking about pneumonectomy, and then, of course, you know, thoracostomy. What goes on with all these? You know, when do you do a wedge resection? When do you do a lobectomy? You know, again, are these terms that our public should know about? You know, what do they all
yes.
refer to?
Well, it's you know, it's a tier of involvement surgically. So you have a little tiny spot on the edge of the lung. You can go in and do a wedge resection for diagnosis. And that is a surgery where through a scope or through a small incision in the chest, you can staple off
yes.
an area non-anatomically. I mean, it's just like taking a piece of a pie, you know, and
yep.
Make a diagnosis. That is not the best cancer operation. So if we find a cancer at that diagnosis, we're going to recommend either what's called a segmentectomy, which is
okay.
an anatomic resection less than lobectomy. So
less
lobe,
than lobectomy.
Lobe, consider a lobe like a leaf on a three-leaf clover. You know, one of the leaves would be a
yeah.
lobectomy. If you take the whole clover off, you get a pneumonectomy, or took the whole lung out, right? We very
yes.
uncommonly do pneumonectomies now because we know that most of the time, we can do reconstructive surgery in the air, in the lung, and not require pneumonectomy. But it's still done.
Wow.
So wedge resection is a diagnostic procedure. Segmentectomy, again, one of the leaves off the three-leaf clover, or
yes,
I mean less than that, something less than that, but still anatomic. And a lobectomy, take one of the leaves off the clover, is what we use for therapeutic lung resection for lung cancer. We also
and is that a cancer operation?
Yes, both of them are segmentectomy, anatomic segmentectomy, which is one level down, like taking a petal off of a flower.
Oh, yes, to, yes, yes, yes.
And one level down than the whole leaf of the clover, the leaf being the clover being analogous to a lobectomy. And they're taking the whole clover out, a pneumonectomy, the whole lung. So
wow.
With that resection, this level of surgery, you always have to sample or do a dissection of the lymph glands that drain from that area of the lung. Because
so
we know that
beside taking lung tissue, we are going to take lymph nodes in this area of the human body to sample those as well. Correct, Rod?
That's correct, because we know that you can have occult, meaning microscopic disease in the lymph gland, and if it's not recognized and addressed with further therapy, you know, immunotherapy or chemotherapy after resection, we reduce the survival of those people. So if we go in blind and just take the spot out and we haven't done a good sampling of the next station of spread of the disease into the lymph glands, we are really not doing a good operation for our patients. We have to sample those glands just like we do in breast surgery and definitely in your area, ENT surgery. My God, you all sample everything, you know. And
Sure.
We need to know if there's occult, meaning only microscopic disease, because it's still like being a little pregnant, you know. You're pregnant or not,
yep.
Right? And so right. And if we see
cancer cells in the lymph nodes.
Yes. And if they're – now, that doesn't happen very often. It's only about 10 or 15% of cases we do surgery on, because we have used PET scans and CAT scans to help us to
surely
discriminate that. But even still, our accuracy rate is about 80, 85%. With radiology, 15% of the time, we're going to miss disease if we don't sample the lymph node.
I got it. And you would sample the lymph nodes at the time you're doing the lung surgery in the same operative setting, correct?
That's correct. And also beforehand, our pulmonologist can do that needle biopsy I was telling you about through the bronchoscope and give us a firsthand understanding, and maybe avoiding surgery when the nodes are positive. And we know you need to have systemic, meaning, you know, chemotherapy or immunotherapy instead before we do a thoracotomy or back to video assisted approach.
Yeah, so, you know, overall, I think to simplify it here, if we have our pulmonologist go through the breathing tube, take a needle, put a needle into the lung tissue and lymph node tissue and sample it, that gives you, the surgeon, a much better idea of what services you need to supply here, correct?
That's correct, or maybe not doing surgery at all. If the disease is found
in
a more central gland, you may want to use radiation or just chemotherapy instead.
Or radiation and chemo. You know, as the next station, Rod, is the next station the liver for lung cancer? Does lung cancer go from the lymph nodes into the liver? Is that the way this follows? Where else does it metastasize?
It's a lot like metastasized to the liver, the bones, and the brain. Those are the three, and the adrenal gland, those four. And you can find it anywhere. Just like head and neck tends to be much more of a regionally localized disease.
Yes.
So but lung cancer tends to find its way to other organs and that's the hierarchy, the liver, the brain, the bones, and the adrenal gland.
So that overall, those areas you would be looking at as well through PET scanning or additional diagnostic testing.
Sure.
Mark, Rod, kind of once we have the lung cancer, once we have lymph nodes involved, what's our cure rate here? What's the 5-year survival, Rod, for these patients? What does it look like? Is it better now than it was 10 years ago? Are we making progress?
Much better. So we're making tremendous progress, not only with regional therapies, which include surgery for node-positive disease, but again, we're not going to do some radical situation in that radical surgery.
Sure.
The addition of radiation for control of regional disease, just like your ENT cancers. And now we have immunotherapy and immunotherapy that you see all over the TV being advertised, and inappropriately so. And also just a better refinement of our systemic chemotherapy. And that refinement also includes reducing the complications from those treatments. Because now, you know, in the past you could really – it was just a dread thing, get chemotherapy. But with lung cancer and many cancers, the complications are much better controlled.
Excellent. You know,
go ahead. Go ahead, Mark.
We're about 40 seconds
we're ready
out.
To wrap it.
Yeah, we need to bring him back. And, boy, we're just so blessed to have a guest.
Let me invite him back. Dr. Landrenau, could I have you back, Dr. Landrenau?
Always. You've always had my attention.
You've got it. Because we're wrapping it up. Go ahead, Mr. Mancini. I think we're out of time.
Hey. Yeah, we're down to 20 seconds. I don't want to get cut off. Dr. Greg Roscoe, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you till we reconvene next week.
GJRMD, 308 at outlook.com.
Yeah,
Greg,
definitely look at Greg. Greg, if they could, you know, until, you know, otherwise, just if there's any lung-related thing that you'd like me to address, just have them email you, and I'll get back with them.
Beautiful. We'll be glad to. And success in your practice in Tampa, and I'll be down to visit you, by the way.
I know you will. See you later.
Thank you.
In the Tampa area. For the docs out there in Tampa and Pittsburgh, here's truly Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. We'll see you next week, same time, same channel, with another great guest coming through with a nice topic. Till then, have a blessed
weekend,
guys.
Thank you very much. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night, guys.